U.S. President Joe Biden says he knows how the U.S. wants to respond to a drone attack that killed three U.S. soldiers.
We will respond in a time and manner of our choosing.
Israeli soldiers dress as women and doctors to carry out an assassination in a West Bank hospital.
Israel has said that these were Hamas operatives. They have said that one of them was carrying a gun.
And a new problem for Russia.
10 years ago, 2 million children were born in Russia each year. In 2023, official data says only 1,200,000 were born, the lowest number since the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991.
Today is Wednesday, January 31st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Scott Walterman. U.S. President Joe Biden said Tuesday he has decided how to respond to a drone attack that killed U.S. soldiers in Jordan, but did not give any detail. Speaking to reporters as he left the White House on a campaign trip to Florida, he also said the United States does not seek a wider war.
I don't think we need a wider war in the Middle East. That's not what I'm looking for.
The Iran-aligned Iraqi armed group Kataib Hezbollah announced on Tuesday the suspension of all its military operations against U.S. troops in the region. The group said on Telegram it was a decision aimed at preventing embarrassment of the Iraqi government. At the Pentagon, Major General Pat Ryder.
On the statement that's out there, I don't think we could be any more clear. That we have called on the Iranian proxy groups to stop their attacks. They have not. And so we will respond in a time and manner of our choosing. When I say actions speak louder than words, there has been three attacks, to my knowledge, since the 28th of January. And I'll just leave it there.
In the West Bank on Tuesday, Israeli forces disguised as civilian women and medical workers stormed a hospital and killed three men they said were Palestinian militants. Hamas confirmed the men were members of the group. Hamas is a U.S.-designated terrorist group. A hospital spokesperson said the men didn't fire back at the Israelis, who said the men were using the hospital as a hideout. State Department spokesman Matthew Miller.
Israel has said that these were Hamas operatives. They have said that one of them was carrying a gun at the time of the operation. So I'm not able to speak to the facts of the operation. You'd have to pass some kind of legal judgment, know all of the facts of the operation. But as a general matter, they do have the right to carry out operations to bring terrorists to justice, but they need to be conducted
including in a hospital.
So we want them to conduct their operations in compliance with international humanitarian law. We would generally say that we don't want them to carry out operations in hospitals, but under international humanitarian law, hospitals do lose some of their protections if they are being used to for the planning of terrorist operations, for the execution of terrorist operations.
The actual hospital building does, but I mean, going in disguised as women and doctors and whatever is something different, and then going in and picking out people in particular rooms and particular beds and killing them seems to be something different.
So again, not able to offer an assessment without knowing all these facts. I said some of the facts that have been presented by Israel are that one of them was carrying a gun and that they were planning to carry out or to launch terrorist operations. So you would have to look at all of those facts to make a specific assessment about this operation. But in general, we do want to see hospitals protected. It is important that no civilians were harmed in this operation.
All right, so there's a lot happening in and around the Israeli-Hamas war. Joining us now to talk about all of this is Michael Provence, who teaches modern Middle East history, focusing on the 20th century Arab East at the University of California, San Diego. Let's start with the Kataib Hezbollah saying they weren't going to attack U.S. troops in the region anymore.
Kataib means pointed or phalange or something like that. So it's the Hezbollah brigades, you could say. So this is an Iraqi Shi'i group that has been close to the government since the United States left in 2010. And it's probably part of the, definitely part of the factions that were allied with the United States in fighting ISIS a few years ago. So things have changed, and of course, the Trump administration assassinated a couple of leading Iranian and Iraqi Shi'i political and military figures in at Baghdad airport a few years ago. So they switched sides, you can say. So
what's their motivation in making this announcement that they're going to suspend their attacks on U.S. troops? Is that, I mean, obviously we don't know what their motivation is, but we can speculate. Is that coming from outside? Is it Iran putting pressure on them? Is that them?
Well, it's probably a mixture of things. I mean, the thing is that these people are pretty close to the Iraqi government, probably. And so is the United States going to launch cruise missiles at the Iraqi government, its ostensible regional ally and former, it's a pretty messy situation. So I think they're trying to give the United States a way to step back from the edge here, and de-escalate, if you like. And probably they didn't expect, in the same way that people have speculated, academics have speculated that Hamas did not expect the dramatic results of their border operation in October. These people probably didn't expect to have such a devastating attack on this American outpost, a day or so ago. So, they're trying to
walk it back a little bit.
Yeah, trying to de-escalate. And, Biden would be smart if he takes that opportunity, I would say. And hopefully he will.
We don't know a lot about it other than, there's a lot of speculation and, Israel said a little bit. But I've never seen anything like this attack on the hospital in the West Bank, where Israeli special forces go in dressed as women, civilian women, and doctors, and kill, I believe, three, what they say were Hamas members. Well, I think Hamas says that, too, that they were theirs.
Yeah, I think so. It's pretty brazen, but, the Israelis assassinate a lot of people in these kinds of operations, including in places like foreign capitals. That goes back 50 years almost to Beirut. So the former prime minister himself dressed as a woman to invade Beirut in 1973 in a rubber dinghy. I'm not making it up. That was Ahud Barak. It's brazen, and certainly it's a kind of an escalating move, but it's not unprecedented. Despite the fact that it's on camera, that's what's unprecedented, I would say.
And how does this? So really, and all of this is going on. And they're trying to put together a deal for a ceasefire, brokered by Qatar and others.
Yeah.
That's got to put a lot of pressure on that process.
Well, the thing is that I doubt that the Israeli forces realized that they were on camera. And when you're dressed up in costume and assassinating people, you probably don't want there to be footage of it, which makes it more difficult for everybody to pretend it didn't happen, and that it was just a score was being settled. Certainly that makes those negotiations more difficult than they would have been otherwise. We've seen things like this before. There was a case more than a couple years ago, it's been 10 years ago now, but the Israelis assassinated a Hamas leader in a hotel room in I think Dubai or Abu Dhabi, and part of that was filmed too. And the passports that the agents used were cloned Canadian passports, and the Mossad got in some trouble over it, especially from Canada, who didn't know that they were, you know, using cloned passports to go assassinate people. So, you know, it's we're not talking about James Bond here, but it's pretty wild stuff.
Michael Provins with the University of California, San Diego. Another issue in the conflict advancing a bit on Tuesday was the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees. You may have heard of it referenced as UNRWA or UNRWA. The U.S. Ambassador to the UN, Linda Thomas-Greenfeld, said Washington wants to see change at the agency following allegations by Israel that employees of the agency took part in the October 7th attack on Israel.
I know that we need to see fundamental changes before we can resume providing funding directly to UNRWA. And as you know, we shouldn't let that cloud the great work that UNRWA does. UNRWA has provided essential humanitarian assistance to the Palestinian people, and UNRWA is the only organization on the ground that has the capacity to continue to provide that assistance.
When asked what fundamental change meant, Thomas Greenfeld said,
"You know, we need to look at the organization, how it operates in Gaza, how they manage their staff, and to ensure that people who commit criminal acts, such as these 12 individuals, are held accountable immediately so that UNRWA can continue the essential work that it is doing."
Also weighing in on this is UN Senior Humanitarian and Reconstruction Coordinator for Gaza, Sigrid Kaag.
"At the moment, beyond political decisions, which are GA-bound, there is no way any organization can replace or substitute the tremendous capacity, the fabric of UNRWA, the ability, and their knowledge of the population in Gaza."
The UN Secretary General met with 35 member states and the EU to discuss UNRWA and how to move forward. We're following these other stories from around the world. An exploration company, Deep Sea Vision, says it has captured a sonar image in the Pacific Ocean that appears to be Amelia Earhart's airplane. The Lockheed 10E Electra aircraft with Earhart on board disappeared 86 years ago in 1937. She was trying to become the first woman to fly around the world when they lost contact with her. Protests by angry farmers spread across Europe on Tuesday as the French government scrambled to placate agriculture workers who have blocked motorways and launched convoys of tractors towards Paris. Their complaints range from rising costs to meeting carbon-cutting targets, fuel prices, inflation, bureaucracy, and Ukrainian grain imports. A judge in the U.S. state of Delaware on Tuesday ruled in favor of investor plaintiffs who challenged billionaire Elon Musk's $56 billion Tesla pay package. That information revealed in a court filing. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is warning that Ukraine's defensive war against Russia is at risk without a new round of aid approved by Congress. The plea for funding comes as the European Union's foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, is also warning that Europe's safety is at stake if Russia wins the war in Ukraine. And experts say a Russian invasion of a NATO country in the coming years is a real possibility. Here's VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent, Cindy Sain.
As Russia continues to pound residential areas in Ukraine, Secretary of State Antony Blinken issued his starkest warning yet that the U.S. Congress must pass a budget that includes desperately needed military aid for Kyiv.
"It is vital that Congress pass the supplemental budget request the President's put before it. Without it, simply put, everything that Ukrainians achieved and that we've helped them achieve will be in jeopardy.
One expert told VOA that former president and Republican presidential frontrunner Donald Trump has significant sway over members of the Republican-led House of Representatives, who are holding up the budget over what they say are concerns over immigration and security at the U.S. southern border with Mexico. Michael Kimmage is a professor of history with the Catholic University of America. He spoke to VOA via Zoom.
Former President Trump seems to be pretty much en route to being the Republican candidate. His word on the Ukraine crisis starts to acquire greater weight, and his word on the Ukraine crisis is not to go forward, but in some respects, just to create obstacles for the Biden administration.
At a campaign rally in Nevada on Saturday, Trump opposed Congress passing the budget.
The so-called border security deal Biden is gushing out and pushing out is not designed to stop illegal immigration. It's designed to continue the invasion of America while sending billions of dollars to Ukraine and other countries.
In Europe, several top leaders, including French President Emmanuel Macron, are also sounding the alarm of what a Russian victory over Ukraine would mean.
So the costs, the real costs, on the short to long run of a Russian victory is too high for all of us.
Some experts say they believe Russian President Vladimir Putin is waiting to see the results of the November U.S. presidential election before changing course on Ukraine, hoping U.S. support would vanish under a Trump White House. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Scott Walterman. Pressure is growing on Hungary to provide Sweden's accession to NATO. They are the last member state to ratify the application. As Henry Ridgewell reports from London, the Hungarian and Swedish prime ministers are supposed to meet on the sidelines of an EU summit in Brussels on Thursday.
Sweden and Finland applied to join NATO in May 2022. 3 months after Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine. Finland joined last year, but Sweden is still waiting, with Hungary, the last NATO member state, yet to ratify its accession after Turkey gave its approval earlier this month. Hungary is trying to flex diplomatic muscle, says analyst Zoltán Pogacar.
I think Viktor Orbán wants to remind Western countries every now and then, don't criticize us because we do have cards. We are not sitting at the table without cards. We do have our cards. So be careful when you try to criticize us for corruption, for rule of law issues, or the quality of our democracy.
Sweden's Prime Minister last week refused an invitation from Orbán to begin negotiations in Budapest on its NATO application. The two leaders are due to meet at a European Union summit in Brussels Thursday. Meanwhile, Russia said this month it would take retaliatory measures if Sweden joins the alliance. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News, London.
And finally, Russia is facing the biggest demographic crisis in its recent history, a drastic drop in births that reflects the fear that many Russians have about starting a family in an uncertain economic and political landscape. Jonathan Speier narrates this report from the VOA Moscow Bureau.
10 years ago, 2 million children were born in Russia each year. In 2023, official data says only 1,200,000 were born, the lowest number since the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991. As sociologists see it, a number of elements contribute to this situation. Moscow sociologist Anton Orek says that in general, the economic situation has worsened, and he says people's standard of living has dropped. To raise a child, Orek says, a people must have confidence in the future. Adding to Russians' pessimistic view of the future is their nation's full-scale invasion of Ukraine. After the start of the war in 2022, pharmaceutical market analysis said the demand for abortion pills in Russia jumped by as much as 60%. The Kremlin has discouraged reporting on Russia's demographic crisis, but independent reporters and analysts point to the invasion of Ukraine as a significant factor. The falling birth rate has prompted authorities to come up with plans to aid families. At the same time, in several regions of Russia, access to abortions in private clinics has been banned. The Kremlin has also embarked on a strategy to promote large families. In a video conference address to the World Russian People's Council last year, Russian President Vladimir Putin called on people to remember what Russian families were like before. Many Russian grandmothers and great-grandmothers, he said, had 7 or 8 children, even more. Putin said Russians should take back and promote what he described as those fantastic traditions. As some observers see it, these conservative slogans will do little to increase the birth rate as long as Russia remains immersed in war. Sociologist Anton Orek says that trying to increase the birth rate and participating in an armed conflict are two things that contradict each other. Statistics suggest that 2024 will be the worst year in terms of births in Russia since the beginning of the 19th century. Meanwhile, on the Ukrainian front, more than 40,000 service people have already died, according to Western intelligence reports, a figure that analysts say provides a less than favourable outlook for efforts to boost the Russian population. For the VOA Moscow Bureau, Jonathan Speer, VOA News.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone at VOA, thank you so much for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Scott Walterman.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Close to a dozen countries have announced they will suspend aid to the United Nations Relief and Works Agency, known as UNRWA, after allegations that 12 staff members were involved in the horrific terrorist attack by Hamas on Israel on October 7th. The United States is the leading contributor to UNRWA and was the first country to suspend aid to the organization. State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller said in a statement that the U.S. is extremely troubled by the allegations. The Department of State has temporarily paused additional funding for UNRWA while we review these allegations and the steps the United Nations is taking to address them, he said. White House National Security Council Coordinator for Strategic Communications John Kirby noted that Secretary of State Antony Blinken made clear in a phone call with UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres that the United States expects a complete and thorough and transparent investigation and that those who should be are properly held accountable, as the UN said, even including the potential for criminal prosecution. UNRWA was established in 1948 for refugees of the 1948-1949 Arab-Israeli War. It provides aid and services to people in Gaza, the West Bank, Lebanon, Syria, and Jordan. UNRWA operates schools, health clinics, infrastructure, and aid projects. Reportedly, 2 million people in Gaza rely on UNRWA services for assistance. Israel has long accused the organization of promoting anti-Semitism in its schools and of allowing Hamas to siphon off money and supplies donated to UNRWA and meant for Palestinian civilians. Spokesperson Miller said that UNRWA plays a critical role in providing life-saving assistance to Palestinians, including essential food, medicine, shelter, and other vital humanitarian support. Their work has saved lives, and it is important that UNRWA address these allegations and take any appropriate corrective measures, including reviewing its existing policies and procedures. In a statement marking International Holocaust Remembrance Day, January 27th, President Biden noted, on October 7th, Hamas terrorists unleashed pure, unadulterated evil on the people of Israel, slaughtering approximately 1,200 innocent people and taking hundreds more hostage, including survivors of the Shoah. It was the worst atrocity committed against the Jewish people in a single day since the Holocaust. As National Security Council Coordinator Kirby said, allegations that even a small number of staff of UNRWA helped in that effort are serious. That is why the United Nations investigation into the charges, he declared, be credible, transparent, and thorough, and frankly, timely.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.